A semi-final that looked to be drifting towards a rain-sodden anti-climax was transformed into one of the most memorable in World Cup history. New Zealand defending 240 to turn over India and take their place in Sunday's final at Lord's. It was disappointing fare for punters on day one as the rain in Manchester refused to budge. But those who returned for a second serving were treated to a classic as the Kiwi seamers tore through India's top order to expose the soft underbelly of their middle order. At 92 for 6, India looked cooked, but a sensational innings of 77 from Ravi Jadeja, supported by a more sedate effort from MS Dhoni, appeared to be swinging the game back in their favour. But this was to be the Kiwis' day. Martin Guptill's brilliant run out of Dhoni effectively sealing the victory. After 40-year wait to reach their first Men's Cricket World Cup final, the Black Caps will now play in their second in succession. As for India, the inquest begins. Welcome to the Wisden Cricket Daily Podcast, in partnership with Travel Bag, creating holidays packed full of memories since 1979. I'm your host, Joe Harmon. Later in the show, we'll be hearing from Chetan Narula for an Indian perspective on events at Old Trafford. But first, sitting alongside me is Phil Walker, Wisden Cricket Monthly's Editor-in-Chief. Hello, Phil.
Evening, Joe.
Did you enjoy that one?
I loved it. Absolutely good fun, wasn't loved it? It. Yeah, it was fabulous. It was a good old-fashioned game of cricket, and there's not surely not a neutral out there that's not thrilled by that result, really. New Zealand are immediately lovable. They take the game seriously without turning into some overblown industry. You know, they're not ready-made icons like the other side. They turn up with their wives and kids and families, watching them in the hospitality boxes. Not the kids, but the girls are generally lightly sozzled, just watching it
they
all play
out. Seem to enjoy a few drinks as the match reaches its climax, don't they?
They have been part of the fabric of the whole show, really, and it was gorgeous at the end as well to see everybody mucking in on the outfield. It has the feel of a kind of a family show with New Zealand, and they've been underestimated throughout this tournament, really. They were even written off after winning 4 or 5 on the spin because they were against supposedly lesser teams. Mm. Well, it's a superb result, really. Superb result for cricket.
And just imagine, we could have, as yesterday the rain kept coming down and they were trying to see if they could work out some kind of game, we could have had some sort of awful, scrappy, soggy 20-over innings in reply to New Zealand's innings, which would have been a really kind of sort of no way to play a World Cup semi-final whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. And
these reserve days work, don't they? They're there for a reason. Use them, I guess.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it would have been ludicrous if they had started, because there was a load of rain around from 8 o'clock anyway last night. So if they had started, they'd have probably run the risk of having to just create some phantom cricket that was just going to be removed from the annals when they had to restart again the following day. It was the right decision. It's a World Cup semi. It's unfortunate for the punters who would have been there on day one, and many of whom wouldn't have been able to make it on day two. But this is a World Cup semi-final, and it only took an hour or so of day two to confirm that it was the right decision last night. It was an authentic game of cricket, and I'm still shaken by it, really. It was a thriller, and I couldn't be happier for those boys. From an English point of view, I'm obviously desperate that England can turn over the Australians and get a result on Sunday. But if they weren't to, and if New Zealand are the team that clinch it for the first time in their history, then that would be just as glorious, wouldn't it, really?
I think we can accept that. I mean, it has possibly been mentioned on the show that my dad's a Kiwi, so I've at least got one side in the final already. Could potentially have two by the end of tomorrow. Although, talking of reserve days, the forecast at Edgbaston is not looking too good. We might have another one of those before this tournament is out.
But we don't have to do any work, do we? We don't have to put together a finals programme or anything like that.
Nothing
on Sunday.
Nothing like that at all.
No.
Phil, what was your moment of today?
Well, there's been a lot of them.
Over the last 2 days.
Yeah, there has been a lot of them. I thought the way that Williamson dealt with a stunning new ball assault yesterday morning, seems like a long time ago now, was brilliant. He is the most technically brilliant cricketer, batsman I've seen in a long time, I think. And Bumrah and Kumar were bowling terrifying swingers, late swingers, and booming bouncers, and Bumrah was pretty much unplayable. And Williamson, although he would never show it, if he were to nick one or play round one or spoon one up in the air or make one false move, then the whole entourage that we talk about, the wives, the families, the lot, they just all have to just pack up and go home, because it was all on him. So I thought that was a masterful 60-odd from 95 balls. It's funny that we're talking about, you know, a great semi-final innings where it's 60-odd in 95 balls. And then Taylor learned from him and carried that on.
There was a lot of criticism at that time that New Zealand weren't getting on with it.
Inexplicable was the word used. Inexplicable by Sourav Ganguly.
So, and again, we're kind of in awe of Williamson just understanding the game, having a feel for the game in a way that, I mean, Sourav Ganguly's played a fair amount of cricket, captained a fairly decent Indian side, and he wasn't really on the mark in picking up that.
Yeah.
He's on the ground. He's still able to see what Williamson Williamson can see. He's not obviously feeling it in the same way.
Yeah.
And Williamson, as ever, seems to be one step ahead of the rest of us.
Yeah, it was inspired for them to aim early for 250, 260 if they were lucky, and 270 was dreamland. As it was, they got 239, maybe a few short from what they were looking for. But they knew in these conditions, if we set a target, then the pressure will start to tell. And they did it brilliantly. They did it really to the letter. But the moment has to be the run out, really. Yeah. It has to be Dhoni's run out. And good old Marty Guptill.
Oh, he's had a shocker in this tournament, hasn't he? He's been so unlucky and out of sorts.
Yeah, and you saw his reaction as well when he nicked off on the first morning. You know, he hurled his bat across the dressing room. And it's a devastating place to be when you can't lay a bat on it. You know, when you're out of form, it's a lonely and isolated place out there. So to see him tear in from deep square leg, one stump to aim at. Maybe Dhoni's too successful to bother diving. I don't know what it was. Maybe he's too cool to dive. But a little bit more, one last sinew from Dhoni and he'd have probably got in. But as it was, when that direct
dive behind the stump, so he's not going to start diving when he's trying to make his ground.
True enough, he's too rich to dive. I get that from afar, obviously. It was just the perfect end, really, the perfect end to an inspired performance, really, from top to bottom by New Zealand, and that really clinched it, because even at that point, I think they needed 31 off 12, and then Dhoni played that incredible
uppercut off Lockie Ferguson, yeah.
To clear the man, Ian Smith was playing a blinder as he has all tournament on comms. And when that cleared the man, 25 from 11, then Dhoni, as has been his wont really throughout this innings and the tournament itself, then blocked a perfectly hittable long half volley for naught. And then took on that second down to square leg. And when the stumps were broken, you just knew. You knew that that was it. That was the game right there. I loved their reaction as well, New Zealand. And you mentioned this just before we started recording this one. And there wasn't the... Maybe it stems from Williamson. Maybe it's part of their national characteristic. But there wasn't this kind of outburst of emotion. It wasn't overblown. I kind of drew the comparison with Pochettino at the semi-final, but I'm not going to talk about Spurs again. They maybe identify that this is their time now. You know, they got to the final, as you say, last time out, and charmed the birds from the trees in that last tournament. But there is a steel to this side now, and although they are not iconic cricketers, you know, they're a mixture of purists and strivers and one or two world-class players in there. But in a tournament where every team is fallible and every team has demonstrated vulnerability and no team is fully convinced, why shouldn't it be them? And that seemed to come across, I think. In the latter stages of that innings, you would have thought they would have wobbled, especially when Jadeja was playing as he was.
Yeah, I mean, I think New Zealand, right from the start of this tournament, even at the start, they were winning games that they looked like they might lose. And today was another example of that, as Jadeja and Dhoni came together and looked to me. Ian Smith said India are favourites at this point, and I think he was probably right. They needed about 10 and over from the last five or six with what ended up being a few wickets in hand. And it started to feel like it was drifting that way. My moment of the day came from also from India's innings. Matt Henry's third ball, getting Rohit Sharma, which is obviously, he's got 500s as well.
I was in the loop. I still haven't seen it.
Paint a picture for you.
Talk me through it.
So yeah, his third ball, Rohit Sharma. It was going to take something special to get him out in this series, or I mean this World Cup, wasn't it? Because he's just been unbelievable throughout. And yeah, it's pretty much unplayable delivery. As a batsman, I think you just got to hope you miss it. Mm-hmm. It's swinging in at him and then leaves him late, catches the outside edge, easy catch behind the stumps. And New Zealand are up and running because they needed that early wicket. Even if it in Rahul had gone, I don't think it would have had the same impact at that stage. They needed that one early.
Yeah.
And then really the floodgates opened. 5 for 3, was it 24 for 4?
Yep.
After that, Kohli obviously goes in Bolt's next over. And suddenly, the floodgates have opened. New Zealand are on the charge and didn't really let up at any stage until Jadeja came on and just batted in a way that I've never seen him bat before.
Yeah, and played brilliantly. New Zealand didn't put a foot wrong during that partnership, but yeah. India are a champion side. Those early stages were obviously going to be critical. When you're defending 239, obviously, you've got to come out hard. But we said it on a previous show, we've done a few, haven't we? We said New Zealand are a new ball team and India are a top order side with the bat. And I think I said to you, you know, if India are 100 for 1 off 20 overs, then we'll all just pack up and go home. But getting those early breakthroughs, getting Kohli in early, and there's a number of key moments. It's one of these games where you'll only remember another key moment when you come back to reflect on it. You know, obviously getting Kohli was enormous, and that was a touch and go decision. Right decision in the end, clipping the top of the bails. But Neesham's catch as well, you know, we kind of forget 5 for 3 and then Kartik comes out to bat and, you know, looked pretty good. He's a good gnarled old pro. And Neesham's catch at backward point. When it happened, I wasn't quite as taken with it because I thought maybe he'd gone two hands initially. Then you watch it and you see how he's anticipated it. Kartik opens the face, looking to kind of guide it behind point. He anticipates where it's going, makes great ground, and then grabs it
and
from
to get
the floor
his fingers,
with his left
and to get his finger underneath it as well, because it looked like he might grab it, but he might kind of make contact with the ground at the same time. But
yeah, it was brilliant. And while the World Cup in terms of quality has, for me personally, it's become increasingly interesting and fascinating as it's rolled along, but there's been some ordinary games, there's been some ordinary batting. It's certainly not been the slugfest that we thought it was going to be, but the fielding I think has generally been brilliant. The catching has been stunning. If you were to put together a top 10 catches of the tournament and show it to a newbie and ask them, is this the boring game of your preconceptions, and just show them. And that catch, Atherton said it was the best of the tournament. I'm not sure I would quite go that far because it wasn't lacerated, it wasn't hit that hard, so he did have time to adjust. But in clutch moments, you need to pull everything out of the bag, and they have done. They have, from start to finish, they've been brilliant.
Well, you can add it to the pile with Stokes, with Sheldon Cottrell. There have been so many in this tournament. Another notable feature of this tournament has been the importance of top order batting and opening partnerships. And England have obviously had flyers in Bairstow and Roy, and when they didn't have Roy, it all kind of collapsed. Finch and Warner have been the absolute bedrock of the Australian side. And people keep saying, if New Zealand are going to get to the final, do anything, their top order needs to fire. Well, it hasn't. They haven't had an opener score a half century since the opening game against Sri Lanka, and yet they still find themselves in the final. It's been a kind of oddity of New Zealand's team, really.
Yeah, and it slightly shows up the lie that you need 11 good cricketers. You don't really. You need seven or eight really good cricketers and two or three absolute champions. If they still had three or four games to play in New Zealand, then I think Tom Latham would be opening the batting next game, because he looked good today. He's a proven test match opening bat, and they can't find anyone to lay a bat on it alongside Guptill, who is also, as we've said, in bad form himself. I imagine they'll go in with what they've got.
I thought Nichols did pretty...
Yeah, he did actually,
well,
in fairness.
To kind of blunt the new ball in the way he did, as you said, India's bowlers were right at them.
Yeah, fair enough.
I thought that was a decent effort. And as you said, they haven't got the second opener who's going to be on 60 from 50 balls, or even in the case of Warner and Finch, kind of 40 or 50 balls and build that platform. So they've really just got to kind of blunt the new ball and do what they can. And conditions played into their favour in that sense.
Yeah,
might well do again at Lords,
but also real balls by Williamson to bat first. Now, I know the patterns have emerged in this tournament that two-thirds of games are won by teams batting first. That said, when you looked at that situation, and everyone was saying, most people were saying on commentary, not a bad toss to lose, and you saw how extravagantly the ball was darting around that morning, it was a brave call, I think, by Williamson,
especially when your top order's not been able to buy a run all
it was easier to bat today, albeit all right on a pitch that was 50 overs old. It started badly anyway, it started tough anyway. You saw how much spin Jadeja doesn't really turn the ball. It was hard to bat on day one, and it was, while the pitch was just as tough to bat on day two, the overhead conditions were slightly more palatable. Yeah. So this is a fair and authentic win. You know, they've not really had the better of conditions, I wouldn't say. I think they deserve everything that they get.
As I was watching the kind of finale and New Zealand get over the line today, I was reminded of Ian Smith earlier in the tournament saying, often you've got to lose a World Cup before you win a World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously making the point that New Zealand lost in 2015, which puts them in a stronger position, should they get to the final, to do it this time. They've obviously done that. They've got to the final. This is obviously a bit of kind of COD psychology, what's going on in players' minds, but it's got to help a bit, hasn't it, that you've been there before, that you've played in what is a really unique match in cricketing terms.
Yeah, entirely. And you spoke to, probably won't remember this, but you spoke to Ross Taylor a few weeks ago, which I ended up transcribing. I'm not bitter. We share and share alike. But he said to you, and you posited the fair question, you know, is there something in the New Zealand mentality that prevents them being ruthless when push comes to shove in those real clutch moments at the back end of tournaments? And he said, in his very kind of Lauche kind of way, no, not really. It's better that we continue to experience these moments, because then we get better at them.
Mm.
And okay, that's a sportsman's response, but it is grounded in logic as well. If you've been there before, if you know that unique atmosphere, that unique kind of pressure, then you know just that little bit better intuitively how to deal with it.
And I think we saw that, as we mentioned, the celebrations today, or lack of, Williamson and Taylor, the two most noticeable, who barely celebrated at all. It was, this is a job half complete. Taylor particularly. He won't play another World Cup.
Yep.
Williamson probably will have at least one more in him. But it's kind of, it's now or never for Taylor. And I wonder if those three defeats leading into the semi-finals, not that the pressure's ever on New Zealand in the same way that it is India or England as hosts, but took the pressure off even more, that really there was so little expectation that they could go out and just make life as difficult as possible for India. And that's what they did, really.
Yeah, very possibly. Certainly, whenever you roll up against India, there's a kind of inverse pressure. The eyes of the world are on the other lot. The eyes of the world are on India. The world is on India because the world is populated by India in cricketing terms, dominated by India. And so maybe that can free you up psychologically up to a point. It's hard to say, really. It's hard to say how these little kind of shifts in momentum and pace actually really fully affect a team during the course of a game. But right from the start, they've been impressive. And it's Williamson who drives the whole thing. Mm. He, you mentioned the opening batsman. Sorry, stat, not my style, stat alert, but 44 times in the last 72 innings since the World Cup 2015, he's been in the first five overs.
Right.
So he's basically opening the batting for them and therefore masterminding the whole tone of the rest of the game. You saw it. I thought his captaincy was excellent as well today, by the way. And we spoke about this on one of the shows the other day with Dan Norcross and Adam Holyoake and so on. And he will never be McCullum, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. McCullum was a joy to watch as a captain, but there was a kind of wildness to it as well. Williamson, I think, is prepared to attack. You saw it. There was slips in a lot today, but he's not gung-ho with it. He's obviously not built like that as a character, but I thought the way that he managed his quicks towards the end, because there was this spectre of the Jimmy Neesham over building towards the end. And, you know, as you say, as Ian Smith said, they only needed 9 and over for the last 9 or 10 overs. With two storied cricketers in, you know, every chance that India were going to knock that one off, but he kept faith with his big guns. He didn't try and kind of spirit a little over out there from Neesham, because he knew that Dhoni would have been eyeing up that over. And he did it brilliantly, I thought. His field placings were good as well, and he kept his cool because he can't do anything else.
Well, that is enough on a magnificent day for New Zealand. We hope to have Andrew Alderson, New Zealand reporter, on our final preview show on Friday. But we haven't really touched that much on India's disappointment today. Earlier, I spoke to Indian cricket writer Chetan Narula to get his thoughts on that shock defeat, and in particular, MS Dhoni's future.
Chetan, wow, what an extraordinary game that was. When you returned to Old Trafford this morning, New Zealand 211 for 5 with 4 overs to bat. Did you give them any chance at all?
Oh, absolutely. But first of all, I'm so mentally knackered from that game. Well, what an epic fight put on by New Zealand. I thought even Tuesday when they batted first in that rain mud innings, I thought the pitch was slowing down a lot. So 240, 250 was always going to be a tough target. But having said that, India's batsmen have often shown form is not a temporary thing. I mean, Virat Kohli, for all that matters, he was due for a big one. It didn't happen. India's batting didn't work as a whole, didn't work as individual, didn't work collectively. And well, perhaps the most shocking result of this tournament, and it's come in the first semi-final, so you know it can be anybody's day in the knockouts, and it was certainly New Zealand's day, or New Zealand's days, I should say.
the two-day international that we had. Before this tournament and during it, we kept asking what would happen if Rohit and Kohli were dismissed early. How would that middle order stack up? And we kind of had our answer today. Even though Jadeja played one of the great knocks, India's middle order still came up short, really, didn't they?
Absolutely. I mean, Jadeja batted at number 8. You can't expect your number 8 to win you a World Cup semi-final single-handedly, although he tried his best. I tweeted on India's state of affairs. 9.9 times out of 10 in the last 3 years, when that top order has failed, India have failed, or India have struggled. Maybe sometimes Rohit Sharma will go on, make a half century. Somebody will make a half century from the middle order. It happens very, very rarely. In the last 3 years, it's all been down to Shikhar Dhawan, Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli. After that, you know, there's no number 4. There's no number 5, 6, or 7. You cannot say, okay, this is the guy who bats at number 4. You cannot say, this is the guy who bats at number 5. This is the guy who bats at number 6 or 7 like that. You cannot say. You cannot put a finger on anybody. Dinesh Karthik comes and leads, and he says that his job is to finish games. Finishing games at number 6, number 7. Today, he's coming ahead of Hardik Pandya and MS Dhoni. Suddenly, MS Dhoni's role has changed throughout the tournament. Hardik Pandya used to come at number 4. Rishabh Pant at number 4. Let me just say, I've never seen a more immature number 4. You know, you've asked, Kevin Peterson had an absolute brilliant tweet about it. How many times have you seen Rishabh Pant do that? Not just in international cricket, but also in the IPL. And then then Yuvraj Singh, who was perhaps India's last great number four, defended him, saying that Rishabh Pant has only played ODIs. And that really explains it so well. India, the powerhouse of world cricket, have an eight-game-old batsman as their number four in a World Cup semi-final. It says everything.
It's incredible that it came to that after the meticulous preparation that had gone into every other aspect of India's World Cup campaign. And then, as you say, you end up with another number four. Inevitably, given his reputation, his standing in the game, a lot of discussion will surround MS Dhoni after this game. What did you make of him shuffling further and further down the order? And what did you make of his innings in the end?
Well, it was pretty obvious that MS Dhoni was not the force that he was once upon a time. There was no doubt about that. Anybody, I've seen tweets today, anybody who's said that, you know, 2011 he was coming ahead of Yuvraj, saying today he's coming at number seven. You know, these are two different batsmen. Dhoni in 2011 was a different batsman to Dhoni in 2019. The thing is that, you know what people don't understand, that he and the team understands his strengths and understands his weaknesses. They realize that he was costing them time, he was costing them run rate in the middle overs. And obviously we had discussed about it in the game against Afghanistan, the game against West Indies, that he needed to come perhaps even lower down the order where he would not cost India so much in the number overs, number 31 to 40. Today, I think the tactic was pretty simple. They wanted, the reason they sent up Dinesh Karthik was to absorb pressure in those first 10 overs, even if they did not score many runs.
Yeah.
They relied on Rishabh Pant and Hardik Pandya to get the scoreboard moving and ticking along. And once that happened, they realized if that happened, MS Dhoni would be somebody to able to take the game deep, especially when you have Jadeja and Bhuvneshwar Kumar batting at 8 and 9. So batting at 7, he could take the game deep. And that's precisely what happened. They took the game deep. It did not work out because when you're chasing 9 and over, it's sometimes not very easy on a very tough pitch. So yeah, but that was pretty much about today. About the future, well, there's already huge speculation among the Indian media camp. The questions were asked at the press conference to Virat Kohli as well. Personally, I don't think he will continue after this. I think this was where he wanted to be there. This is where he wanted to finish his career. Perhaps with a trophy at Lord's, that's not going to happen. I think after the final is done on Sunday, we will get an email from the BCCI telling us that MS Dhoni has bid farewell to international cricket.
Okay, well, we'll see how that unfolds. We have touched on Jadeja there. On a fairly grim day for Indian cricket, he was a shining light right from the very start, with brilliant run out, an excellent catch in the deep, and then he batted certainly as well as I've ever seen him bat. His first half century for 5 years, I think it was, in ODI cricket. And this is a guy who was seemingly a specialist subfielder for much of the tournament. Should he have been in this side a lot earlier?
That's a very interesting question. Should he have been in the side? I mean, India don't really play with a lot of all-rounders. I mean, sometimes Bhuvneshwar Kumar, yes, Hardik Pandya, Kedar Jadhav. The thing is, India have had a set template for the last 2 years. And with the wrist spinners' success, I think they were pretty well figured out. But they did feel the need to take Ravindra Jadeja if they felt, you know, the pitches would slow down and three pacers would be required in some of the matches. It came to pass, but in a totally different way, that India's wrist spinners, after the first half of the tournament, they weren't really effective. As pitches became slower and slower, they weren't really effective. And therein came the need to play Jadeja. And of course, there was the comment from Sanjay Panjrekar. It ignited a lot of passion. I'm not sure. I think he should have been in the side from the very beginning. I think in a tournament like the World Cup, your playing 11 consistently evolves, especially in a tournament like this one, where we've seen so many different conditions within a game, within two games, on the same ground, within two successive games. So conditions have to, I mean, tomorrow's game at Edgbaston might have totally different conditions. So you never know. Basically, there's been such vast difference in conditions. So any team has to evolve and adapt. And I think India did that really well, especially with bringing in Jadeja. And yet, he had a very, very great day personally. I thought when he had that run out, I was like, okay, could this be Jadeja's day? But then you realize for him to have a great day, India's top order would have to fail. It did fail. And he, again, had a great day, that half century. I think that breathed life into India's innings and gave them hope when it seemed lost. But even then, I thought it was too much to climb. Even, you know, chasing 240 is too hard when you fight for three. And I think that was where the game was lost.
I have to admit, there was a moment there when he launched Santner back over his head when there was about five or six overs to go. And I thought, there's nothing that this guy can do too wrong today. This has got to be his game from now on. It was all shaped up for it. And then, of course, he was gone soon after. But then even at that stage, it looked like Dhoni could still pull it off. He uppercut Lockie Ferguson in for six, seemed to be ready to kind of launch. And then what an amazing piece of fielding that was from Martin Guptill. We've had a shocker of a tournament. comes good when it really matters in the field.
Oh, absolutely. Martin Guptill has had a couple of screamers in the field. I think I remember a catch against Australia, was it? And there was another catch against Pakistan. I think they've had a couple of screamers today. Yeah. Jimmy Neesham again taking another screamer to dismiss Dinesh Karthik. So yeah. Martin Guptill and his teammates have been really sharp in the field. I think the best four fielding sides made it to the semi-finals, which is obviously tells a different story. Apart from that, I think the one element I thought in that run out, I think MS Dhoni, his right hand is, he was hit on his right thumb and he couldn't place the ball further or where he actually wanted to place it. And that really brought Guptill into play. He bounced on the ball and threw it. But again, in that situation, you still have to throw the ball, hit the direct hit and get the wicket. And that changed the game. Even at that late stage, as you pointed out, it changed the game. And somebody pointed out on Twitter again that, his career, his first innings, he was dismissed for a run out. It would be almost poetic if this is his last innings in international cricket and he was again run out.
And what of Virat Kohli? So he scored 443 runs at 55 in the World Cup, 550s and 9 knocks. For anyone else, you'd say that's a very, very good World Cup. But obviously for Kohli, no hundreds. His team have got knocked out in the semi-finals. Has he disappointed overall in this tournament?
To a certain degree, yes. I wouldn't agree that this has been a good World Cup for Virat Kohli. A good World Cup for Virat Kohli would have ended in winning the trophy because there are two lines of thoughts here. The first one says, and he's admitted to it, that I asked him this question before the semi-final and he admitted that he's been batting differently. He's been batting differently in the sense that he's been the anchorage point of the Indian innings. He's seen what the openers have done. He's seen what the middle order is capable of doing or not doing, how the pitch is behaving, reading the situation. That's how he's batted. He's not batted the way Virat Kohli bats. Yes, he's followed the same template, got the rotation of strike, hit the boundaries, but he's batted like, he wants to bat out the 50 overs. Whenever he comes to the crease, he's batted like he wants to bat out the 50 overs and put his team in a commanding spot. That's not Virat Kohli. That's not Virat Kohli's template. I mean, Virat Kohli would be a free-flowing batsman and not thinking about lasting 50 overs. I mean, everybody wants to bat 50 overs. But that's not your primitive thought, is it? I mean, or your primary thought, really. So I think he's batted differently. But when you bat differently, then you're batting as the captain. You're batting as a leader. You're not batting as the leading batsman of your side. And in that sense, if you're batting as the leading batsman, or if you're not batting as the leading batsman, if you're batting as a captain,
yeah,
then your World Cup should in a World Cup trophy. So in that sense, I think Virat Kohli, the batsman, has disappointed a bit. He himself was disappointed because this is a second semi-final along with the semi-final in the World T20. He's not done much for all his credit. He's not done much in knockouts for India. Even in the quarterfinal in 2015, it was Rohit Sharma. I think the best that comes to mind of Virat Kohli was 2011 World Cup final when he had that partnership with Gautam Gambhir, scored those 30-odd. He's a totally different batsman today. Yes, he's not done too much justice, but again the question mark is how much can you rely on Rohit Sharma, 600 runs, 400 runs from Virat Kohli? How much more can you rely on two batsmen, especially with Shikhar Dhawan not there? KL Rahul did his part with 300, but he's not very consistent. He's not somebody who's very reliable. So again, the bottom line is, with all the disappointment with Virat Kohli, where was India's middle order?
And just finally to wrap up, Chetan, when India have failed to deliver in previous World Cups, the reaction back home has been furious, I guess is one way to put it. How do you think this semi-final defeat will be received back home, particularly given that very few people saw it coming against New Zealand?
Well, the thing is, New Zealand are a very light side in India. I mean, if it was Pakistan, it would be ballistic. People would be going ballistic.
Yeah.
If it was Australia, even England, perhaps it would be a very, it would be a much sharper reaction. New Zealand are a very well-liked side in India. It might seem funny, but I think a lot of Indians will support New Zealand in the final against Australia,
right,
or England, who are not very liked teams in India in that sense. So it's a tough one, really. There will be some anger. Obviously, some people need to make headlines and catch TRPs. So from that point of view, there might be a little angry reaction, but from what I've engaged so far, it's been a heartbreaking loss, a disappointing loss, and this time around it's a little more muted. I think it'll take a few days for this loss to sink in, given that you had players like Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli doing exceedingly well, somebody like MS Dhoni, perhaps we will never see him play for India again. So I think all these factors, and I have to mention Jasprit Bumrah or Mohammad Shami, I mean, they bowl spectacularly.
Yeah, they're brilliant. Yeah.
In that sense, in terms of, and India's fielding was great. Hardik Pandya, as a bowler, had had a fantastic World Cup. From these angles, you know, from these individual perspectives, India had a great World Cup, and people will be, you know, enjoying these personal trees of their favorite players. From a collective point of view, I think because of all these factors, they know the team played really well. They were the number one team in the league stage. I think that might just help dial down the angst.
Sure. Well, thank you so much, Chetan, for today, and also for your insights across the World Cup. You've been brilliant to listen to. Sorry I won't get a chance to listen to you in the final, but no doubt we'll hear again from you in future.
No worries. Pleasure.
Cheers,
thanks.
Chetan.
So those are thoughts of Chetan.
He's good, isn't he?
He is good. We'll see if his prediction of Dhoni comes true in the coming days. We will, of course, be back tomorrow with all the reaction to that clash between England and Australia. A rather big one. Can England become the first team ever to beat the Aussies in a World Cup semi-final? They won 7 from 7 up to this point. That's quite a demoralising stat in some way. In fact, I wish I hadn't used it now.
Yeah, I told you it the other day. My shoulders just slumped. Yeah, you just collapsed in front of me. Not for the first time, Joe.
Yeah. Look, they're serial winners.
It was interesting when I spoke to Sam Landsberger a couple of weeks ago. He said, oh no, now everyone believes that we're just going to win it. Yeah, they'd written them off for a week, and then now the whole of Australia has decided that this is theirs. This is number 6. Can England do it? Do they dare to do it? That's the thing. I'm concerned about what happens if they bat first. As I said to you earlier, I think they will bat first if they win the toss. Under those kinds of dark skies at Edgbaston, don't get away, then we might be in trouble. But I've said England, so I'm going to go with England.
Well, I'm sticking with England too. We shall see. This has been the Wisden Cricket Daily Podcast in partnership with Travel Bag.
And we're not done yet.
Creating holidays packed full of memories since 1979. Thanks for joining us, and don't forget to subscribe on Spotify or any of the other usual platforms.